It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time? Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Stones Day here at WWL and in New Orleans. Stones finally playing Jazz Fest. Keeping an eye on the weather. 40% chance for showers. Some of it could stay north of the lake. They don't know. We'll let you know. We'll check with the weather around 8 o'clock, see what they say, what the latest is on that. So officially 40% chance for showers today. Highs of 86, highs of 82 tomorrow with a 60% chance for rain. Then a chance for showers decreases to 20% for Saturday and Sunday, but it's going to be hot. Highs between 85 and 90. I think we knocked on the door of 90 yesterday. If we didn't break it yesterday, I think some areas did. I got my poll going here about Beatles or Stones, and it's pretty even. Half and half. Half saying Beatles, half saying Stones in their prime. Aaron Dusso joins us now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, to talk about things more serious. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
But before we do get more serious, if I had to narrow you down, Beatles or Stones, one or the other, who would you pick?
I would probably go with the Beatles.
Okay, that's fine. It's America. You're entitled to your opinion no matter how wrong
right.
You are. No, I'm just kidding. Tell me about this new poll that's out about what Americans think about elected officials as it relates to people in other parts of the world.
Right, yeah, it's really interesting. Pew, who does a lot of great research, has a poll that they did asking individuals, do you see elected officials as caring about people like you? And, this is always a tough question for people to answer. And in the United States right now, it seems like we're sitting at about 85% of people don't believe that elected officials care about people like them. And that compares to the world, which is only at like about 74%.
And what I'm wondering is, how does that relate to the surveys that we've seen constantly where 90-whatever percent of people think Congress sucks, but not their man or woman, their guy or girl is okay. It's the rest of Congress that is a problem.
Right. I mean, this is going to show that we're continuing to increase where people might start to even believe that their own person is a problem. Mm-hmm. But typically we see a situation where, people like their member of Congress, but they hate Congress as an institution because it doesn't produce the results that they would like to see. And this kind of evidence even tracks going back, many decades. The American National Election Study is the gold standard for political scientists when it comes to surveys. And it goes back to 1952 when it was asking a very similar question. And it's showing that we're kind of at the bottom.
Wait, go back to that, Professor, that part again about the win?
So the American National Election Studies is a survey that's done after every national election, and it's been doing it since 1952, and it's been asking a very similar question. And we can see that we're probably living at a point where at the lowest kind of belief among Americans, we call it political efficacy, our elected officials actually care about what we think.
Where does this fall with us or them? Because it seems like we're in an us or them society where our side is right, your side is wrong, and the other way around.
Well, what's really interesting about that, so you can break it down by partisan leaning. So Pew does this, and the American National Election Study does this. And in both cases, it showed the decline is actually stronger among Republicans. So we've seen, there's slight lead, essentially. So 89% of Republicans, don't believe that elected officials care about them, whereas only 81% of Democrats. So neither's good, but slightly more Republicans dislike or don't believe that elected officials care about them.
Here's my problem, Professor, and I have a hard time understanding polls and interpreting them because my mind just doesn't work that way. I handle arguments better than I do polls, and I guess because of whatever side of the brain it is with math or whatever it is. I'm not here to psychoanalyze me, but I guess the question I'm asking is, how can people have so little faith in Congress as a whole, but yet think their side is so right?
So, I mean, partisanship is a psychological attachment. So it's something along the lines of how we view ourselves. So I adopt a partisanship, and that becomes part of my identity. And when something becomes part of your identity, we tend to do all kinds of psychological tricks in order to feel good about that. And so we'll ignore anything that would be negative about our partisanship, and we'll accept anything that would show it's good. And so our brains are totally rigged to do this exact thing for us all the time, and not just in politics, but in all parts of our lives. So it really is a psychological defense mechanism against kind of negativity. So for us personally, we can love our partisanship, but we can see real big problems with the institutions at large.
And that goes to cognitive dissonance, where I feel this way, but then the facts show me this, so then I'm feeling and thinking, and those two are at loggerheads, so what do I do, right?
Right, yeah, the cognitive, we are really good at being able to hold contradictory beliefs. Our brains work mysteriously, but they work really well in that way.
And I guess it comes down maybe to emotion as opposed to logic. Maybe those are the two things I'd have to get a psychologist on, I guess, to talk about that. As far as this Pew Research poll, how does it break down with men and women? Is there a big difference? Does it break down differently according to race? Does it break down differently according to education, party affiliation, et cetera?
It appears to be pretty consistent. So men and women are, within a couple of points of each other. When we break it down by race, ethnicity, we do see, a little bit more belief among Asian Americans. But by and large, again, we're pretty close, and even by age, we see a similar kind of numbers. Thus, within 5 points of each other. Thus, it's really consistent across the board. We can't really pinpoint one group as really becoming disaffected by this.
A little more belief among Asian Americans that the government, and this is in the United States now we're talking about, right, that the government does represent them or is doing the right thing?
Yeah, right. It's 77% say they don't, so it's not like we're going gangbusters here, but a slight uptick seemingly among Asian Americans.
Any reason for that you could think of?
Not really, because, if you think of the actual representation in Congress or even in state legislatures, there's not, a large number of Asian Americans there. Thus, you might not be able to connect kind of this demographic one-to-one, with these people.
So how does race factor in with politics or ideology? And are politics and ideology the same thing? Because maybe you might find yourself going back to the cognitive dissonance part where you might feel differently than your party does, but yet you default to the party anyway.
Right. Yeah. So we do think about ideology and partisanship as different things. In particular, a lot of people do ultimately default to their partisanship over an ideology. And there's actually quite a bit of research that individuals will tend to believe, a majority of Americans will claim to be conservative. So this is pretty easy. That's only if you ask people, are you liberal or conservative, using those kind of generic terms. But if you actually measure people's ideology by asking them specific questions about policy issues, what we find is actually a majority of Americans support liberal policy issues. And so this can be part of that cognitive dissonance that you're pointing to, is that we'll say I'm a conservative, but ultimately the policies I want to see enacted are actually fairly liberal. And so I'm angry at this point.
We'll take a break, pick it up here. We come back. I want to talk about the people that are elected looking like the people that vote for them. And is that a problem? And then when it comes to education, I know people without a college degree are underrepresented, as I understand it, in Congress, but I guess what I'm saying is, do we really want, no disrespect, but somebody that has not really studied the issues? And here's, Professor, I'll set it up and then you can answer all this when we come back. When it comes to defaulting to partisanship, is there any way to measure? People really sit down and say, well, let's look at the pros and cons of abortion. Let's look at the pros and cons of immigration, let's look at the pros and cons of pick a political issue, and let me sit down and really evaluate what I believe on both sides and see if there is an argument to be made on both sides, or that the truth, as it always is somewhere in between, or if they just, again, default to that partisanship. And if that's the case, then maybe I don't know. What do the politicians do that are elected? Do they ideologically or philosophically look at both sides of the issue, or do they just jump in line? And if that's the case, then who's forming the line and what is it forming behind? 621, we're talking to Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. 80% of Americans say elected officials don't care about people like them. What do you think? Do you think your elected official cares about you or not? Or are they more obliged to big business and special interest, et cetera? 504-260-1870. Traffic now, WWL.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/AcrossAmerica.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, The Stones, bringing us back, covering a song that Irma Thomas did first, believe it or not. Aaron Dusso is our guest, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. 80% of Americans say elected officials don't care about people like them. Professor, I asked you a whole ton of questions before we went to the break. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, your first question I kind of think of was, well, why is it that Americans are seemingly so turned off? Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a book that came out a few years ago prior to COVID called White Collar Government. You know, and part of the issue has to be that, well, our government, and particularly the federal government and even state legislatures, are made up of individuals whose socioeconomic backgrounds are not consistent with what the majority of America is. It's way overrepresents individuals from the top strata, particularly white collar backgrounds and people who are wealthy. And, you know, right now you can say that by different measures, about half of Congress is made up of millionaires, and only maybe about 10% of the United States is millionaires. So this is, and what the book shows is that these individuals have fundamentally different views on life. They see things differently. They have different policy positions. And so when they're going about asking a question about should we raise the minimum wage, they see it from a situation where they've never had to work, you know, for the minimum wage. They've never had to find childcare. It's never been an issue getting health insurance because it's just always been there. So they're asked to then make policy for people who actually have had to struggle to get all of those things. And so there could be a legitimate reason for us as Americans to distrust or believe that, you know, our elected officials don't represent us, because in many ways they don't.
But let me just play devil's advocate here and say that, you know, I don't think you'd want me running Microsoft or Apple. I don't think you'd want me running a big Fortune 500 company, because I don't have the qualifications for that. I'm not educated enough to do it. I wouldn't make the right decisions, I don't think. And I guess because maybe sometimes you can't take a common man approach to that. Is it the same when it comes to running the government and dealing with complicated foreign relations? And I get people that text me about foreign aid, not realizing that sometimes the cheapest thing we can do is spend money on foreign aid, because it keeps us out of military conflict. And we need people that are able to ideally sort their way through complicated issues and not just be swayed by big money. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, so there is some, you know, a complication there. But what the book actually shows is that when you look at people who grow up, right, so where were you born, when did you grow up, and then you can go on to succeed. You can go on to get bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and PhDs, and you can become wealthy. But what it shows is that when you even, you know, become wealthy, you are still different than other wealthy members of Congress, you know, that grew up mm-hmm. and, you know, essentially never faced those problems.
Trust fund babies, what have you, silver spoons.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so what we might be looking for would be those individuals born, you know, into, you know, the middle class, blue collar kind of perhaps, you know, families who then can grow up, get those education, get the knowledge and success that we, you know, think can be valuable when you're in office, and have them still remember, oh, yeah, I remember what it was like when my first job was minimum wage.
And then you get back to the structure of the party and getting your foot in the door as a candidate. Do those people have a chance against the trust fund babies, et cetera?
Right. Yeah, that's very challenging, because I tell my students many things. If you have, you know, if you have the time, you can knock on every door, or you can just skip the line and pay for your, you know, campaign out of your own pocket.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time and your insight as always. Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science, Indiana University, Indianapolis. Thursday morning, we come back. We'll talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Right now, we pause for WWL First News.